From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherie Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, our concert with Rebecca Kilgore, singing jazz and pop from the 30s and 40s, accompanied by pianist and songwriter Dave Frischberg. They perform together in Portland, Oregon, where they both live, and they have a new CD called Not a Care in the World. Songs by Harold Arlen, Duke Ellington, Johnny Mercer, and Harry Warren, coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Rising floodwaters have claimed two lives in northwestern Minnesota. Dan Gunderson of Minnesota Public Radio reports.
A pregnant woman and her 3-year-old daughter are dead after their car plunged into a flood-swollen stream. The sheriff in Wilkin County says 29-year-old Pamela Wagner was trying to cross a water-covered bridge when her car was swept into the stream. The woman and her daughter were able to escape the flooded car. The woman tried to walk for help in sub-freezing temperatures, carrying her daughter. National Guard troops found the woman and her daughter about a mile away. Authorities say they died of exposure. Rivers and streams are exceeding record levels all along the Minnesota-North Dakota border. For National Public Radio, I'm Dan Gunderson in Moorhead, Minnesota.
Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat has agreed to help prevent more suicide attacks by Palestinian militants. The report comes after a meeting between the Palestinian leader, a senior CIA official, and the leader of Israel's Shin Bet Security Service. The Associated Press quotes an Israeli security official who says that Palestinian security forces have already helped stop one suicide attack in recent days. But unrest continues in the West Bank town of Hebron today. Clashes have injured at least 7 Palestinians. A German court today accused Iran's leaders of state-sponsored terrorism. The court ruled that the highest officials in Tehran were behind the murder of an opposition figure and 3 of his colleagues at a Berlin restaurant in 1992. NPR's Edward Lifson reports from Berlin.
After a 3.5-year trial, an Iranian and 3 Lebanese men were convicted today of involvement in the murders. 2 received life sentences. A 5th Lebanese man was acquitted. But the presiding German judge in the decision said that Iran's political leadership ordered the crime. The judge referred to a special committee as being behind the act. It's known that represented on that committee are Iran's president, its foreign minister, intelligence minister, and Iran's spiritual leader. The German judge stopped short of naming them. Tehran denies any involvement in the killings. Washington has long sought the international isolation of Iran on charges of state-sponsored terrorism. Now the policies of European countries, especially Germany, of trading with Iran while bringing up the issues of terrorism will be reviewed. In Berlin, I'm Edward Lifson reporting.
The National Transportation Safety Board is checking reports of a possible missile sighting near New York City last month. The report has refueled speculation that a missile could have brought down TWA Flight 800 last summer. Papers in Minneapolis and St. Paul are reporting that crews from 4 different passenger jets reported seeing a possible missile last month. Investigators looking into the cause of the TWA crash still say a bomb or a mechanical malfunction may have caused the accident to occur. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up nearly 2 points at 6,565. Trading is moderate. This is NPR. In NPR's business update, the stock market opened lower for the 2nd day in a row, but seems to have recovered somewhat. We have more from Bloomberg's Doug Krisner.
Among the active issues is Sears. A bankruptcy court ruled the company improperly collected payments from customers who filed for bankruptcy. Sears will voluntarily return the funds, but that will have a negative effect on earnings. Sears also reported disappointing sales for March. Its stock is down 4%. Among the day's earnings reports, Chrysler posted record first quarter profit on continued strong sales of its light trucks, while the results from General Electric were in line with expectations. Computer-related issues are lower as investors brace themselves for a litany of high-tech earnings announcements next week. I'm Doug Krisner.
A lawsuit has been filed on behalf of 9,000 Los Angeles area students who may have been exposed to hepatitis through tainted strawberries. The class action suit names three defendants, including the San Diego distributor who falsely claimed the Mexican berries were U.S. grown. That had made them eligible for the school lunch program. The lawyer filing the suit says a lifetime medical monitoring fund should be set up for kids who ate the possibly tainted berries. Questionable fruit was sent to several states, but Michigan is the only one where a major outbreak of hepatitis occurred. About 1,800 workers are on strike at the Chrysler plant in Detroit. The facility is the sole supplier of engines for some of the automaker's popular pickup trucks. Both sides are meeting today to schedule new contract talks. And a published report says good times are rolling at Ford. The Wall Street Journal says company's management is expected to recommend a 12% increase in Ford's dividends. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from this and other NPR member stations. Contributors include the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, supporting public understanding of technology, industry, and economic growth.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by this and other NPR member stations, by Barnes & Noble, bookseller since 1873, and by Beacon Press, publisher of Questions of Heaven, The Chinese Journeys of an American Buddhist by Gretel Ehrlich. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. One of the jazz singers I consider to be among the best today isn't well known. She doesn't perform much outside of her hometown, Portland, and she records on a small label. So I'm delighted to introduce or reintroduce you to her singing with this encore presentation of our concert with Rebecca Kilgore. And delighted to present with Kilgore, at the piano, the wonderful musician and songwriter Dave Frischberg. His best-known songs include Sweet Kentucky Ham and My Attorney Bernie, as well as the Schoolhouse Rock favorite Just a Bill. Rebecca Kilgore and Dave Frischberg have a new CD together called Not a Care in the World on the Arbors Jazz label. They recorded it in New York over a year ago, and while they were on the East Coast, they came to our studio to record the concert we're about to hear. Our concert opens with a song from 1933 by Harold Arlen and Ted Kohler.
My trousers pressed, shoes shined, I had my coat and vest relined. Take a look at my lapel, see the flower, can't you tell? I'm happy as the day is long. Haven't got a dime to lend, I got a lot of time to spend. Just a pocket full of air, feeling like a millionaire. I'm happy as the day is long. Got a heavy affair, and I'm having my fun. Am I walking on air? Gee, but I'm the lucky one. I got my peace of mind. Knock wood, I hear that love is blind. That's good, cause the things I never see never seem to worry me. I'm happy as the day is long. I'm happy, happy, happy as the day is long. I'm happy, so happy, happy as the day is long. Got a heavy affair and I'm having my fun. Am I walking on air? Gee, but I'm the lucky one. I got my peace of mind. Knock wood, I hear that love is blind. That's good, cause the things I never see never seem to worry me. I'm happy as the day is long. I'm happy as the day is long.
Wonderful. And that's Rebecca Kilgore singing with Dave Frischberg at the piano. Becky, welcome to Fresh Air. This has been an ambition of mine for a long time to have you sing on the show,
well,
and I'm delighted that we're actually doing it. It's remarkable to me that you can sing as wonderfully as you do, and yet having you started so late professionally to actually sing in front of people.
That's right, but I was a closet singer before that, so I had lots of practice in my own living room.
You gave up your day job, what, just a couple of years ago?
That's correct. Actually, 2.5. Yep.
What was the turning point to give it up?
I was working full-time, and it was getting to be too much with all the gigs I had at night, and it was clear that I had to make a decision, and I had the support of my boss and my colleagues, and they said, yes, do it. So I quit my secretarial job.
Well, equally remarkable to me is that you didn't even sing in front of people until, what, you were 30, 31?
That's right.
What was the turning point there to actually get you to start performing?
I joined a band.
You went from not singing to joining a band.
Yeah, it was just a funny turn of events that I happened to join a band, and there was no turning back. I was hooked.
So you were a closet singer for many years, singing at home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was accompanying myself on guitar. I love to find old songs and just learn them for my own benefit. I really didn't have any goals or aspirations to be a professional. It just happened.
Let's do another song. Let's do it as if I'd be singing too, right?
Well, feel free to sing along.
Yeah,
you said you did know this one, right? All My Life?
Oh, it's a wonderful song, yeah. Say something about the song before you sing it.
Well, I'm trying to remember where I first heard it. I think it was Ella Fitzgerald. It's from 1936, and it's just a very poignant, sweet song.
For you, my wonderful one, I've begun living all my life. All my love has been waiting for you. My life is sublime now that I am giving all my. So lovely, so far above me, I'm almost afraid to look. But I adore you, I place before you a heart that's an open book. All my life, hold me close to your heart, but all else above. My love, darling, all my life. You seem so lovely. So far above me, I'm almost afraid to look. But I adore you, I place before you a heart that's an open book. All my life, hold me close to your heart, but all else above. Hold my love, darling, all my life, with all of my love.
Beautiful. That's Rebecca Kilgore singing Dave Frischberg at the piano. Rebecca, has this always been your music, jazz and pop standards from the 30s and 40s?
It seems to have been. I recall being out of step with my peers all my life, and this music just captivates me, and I've always somehow gravitated to it. I don't know why.
Now, how did you find it? I know when I was growing up, I was listening to rock and roll, but my parents listened to a station in New York called WNEW that used to play everything from Perry Como to Frank Sinatra, the good stuff and the not the not so good. But I was exposed to some songs through that. How were you exposed to songs from another era?
You know, that's a really good question, and I don't know the answer. I just at some point discovered Billie Holiday and Ella Fitzgerald, and they were it for me. They were my mentors, and I really can't remember how. Probably I just discovered an old used record in a used record store, and it was that kind of music from then on. I think it was when I was in high school.
What was your parents' music when you were young?
Well, my dad was a classical composer and the choir director at our church, and he wrote some serious choral music, beautiful music. And that's about all I remember. I remember my dad composing classical music at home.
Did you sing in the church choir?
Yes, I did.
Did you like that music?
Very much. I love part singing. I'm an alto, and that's a lot of fun.
No, I love your timing of beautiful jazz phrasing.
Oh, thanks.
Did that just come naturally to you? Did you work at that?
I guess it came naturally. If I've worked at it, it hasn't been anything conscious. I don't work at how I'm going to sing a particular song or imitate anyone. I just listen really intently to the singers I love, and it just happens to come out, I guess.
Becky, I still can't help but wonder, what was your song fantasy life like during those years when you were a closet singer up until the age of 30 when you didn't perform at all?
Really, I didn't have any fantasy. I just, I guess I would listen to my records and imagine what that was like. But and so I really didn't have any aspirations. When I did see the band that I ended up being a part of, there was a woman who was playing guitar and singing, which was what I ended up doing. And when I saw her doing that, it did spark off something in me, and because I had never seen anyone contemporary singing that music. So I guess it was a very latent, unacknowledged fantasy, if it was at all.
But you didn't imagine yourself a singer? There wasn't a particular singer you wanted to be?
Well, I think Ella Fitzgerald in all ways is the most perfect singer in my mind, so I guess I would sing along with her in the car at the top of my lungs and pretend I was Ella Fitzgerald, which is quite a stretch. But
so when you joined this band, what was the band called? What was their repertoire like?
It was called Holy Cats, spelled W-H-O-L-L-Y, Cats, which was a Charlie Christian song, I believe. And it was a small group, saxophone, trumpet, bass, and guitar and vocals. And it was all the swing era music of the 30s and 40s, which I just plugged right into. It was perfect.
On your album, I Saw Stars, you do a lot of songs that I love, and I love the way you do the song. So I'm going to request a song from that CD. And this is No Love, No Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why you like this song.
Well, it's just another one of those romantic songs, and it's it took place during World War II, and the women were saying goodbye to their men as they went across the shores. And so this is a poignant love song about love lost. No love, no nothing, until my baby comes home. No sir, no nothing, as long as baby must roam. I promised him I'd wait for him till even Hades froze. I'm lonesome, heaven knows, but what I said still goes. No love, no nothing, and that's a promise I'll keep. No fun with no one, I'm getting plenty of sleep. My heart's striking though it's like an empty honeycomb. No love, no sir, no nothing till my baby comes home. A promise I'll keep. No fun with no one, I'm getting plenty of sleep. My heart's on strike, and though it's like an empty honeycomb. No love, no sir, no nothing till my baby comes home. No love, no sir, no nothing till my baby comes home.
We're featuring a concert with Rebecca Kilgore and Dave Frischberg, recorded at the end of 1995. They have a new CD together called Not a Care in the World, on which they perform some of the songs we're hearing today. This is Fresh Air. One of my greatest pleasures hosting Fresh Air is presenting performers who aren't as well known as they should be, so I'm particularly enjoying this concert. We hope we've helped you find music, books, and movies that have given you pleasure. On this National Fundraising Week, we need to ask you for something, a pledge. The money will go toward bringing you interviews and concerts that you enjoy. Thank you for your support. Let's get back to our concert with Rebecca Kilgore and Dave Frischberg. Now, I want you to do another song which you've also recorded, and it's Namely You, which is from the show Lil Abner,
mm-hmm.
which I guess I'm one of the many people who was in, you know, a high school or summer camp production of that in back in the chorus someplace. Now, how do you know this song? Do you like the musical? And to ask you yet another question in here, do you look to Broadway a lot for songs?
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, not contemporary Broadway, but older Broadway.
A lot of cast recordings in your collection?
You bet, yeah. And now, and that reminds me that when I was a child, I did listen to those recordings. Yeah, so there's part of the answer where I heard this music.
But were you in the high school productions or summer camp productions?
No.
Why?
I'm extremely shy. I should be a librarian or a... computer nerd. I was a computer programmer for a long time, so that kind of suits my disposition a lot better. I'm a very reluctant performer.
Let me let you sing Namely You. This is Johnny Mercer?
Johnny Mercer and Jean DePaul, 1956.
You deserve a gal who's willing, namely me. One who'd love to have your children, namely me. Standing there in the doorway, waiting at the close of day, with you all the way to love, honor, and obey. You deserve two arms to hold you, namely mine, there to comfort and enfold you, rain or shine. I deserve someone strong and handsome, bashful and shy and true. I know just the one who'll do, namely you. Standing there in the doorway, waiting at the close of day, with you all the way to love, honor, and obey. You deserve two arms to hold you, namely mine, there to comfort and enfold you, rain or shine. I deserve someone strong and handsome, bashful and shy and true. And I know just the one who'll do, namely you.
Becky Kilgore singing, Dave Frischberg at the piano, and they perform together often in Portland, Oregon. They've recorded together as well. And Dave Frischberg, as you may know, is also a songwriter and singer and has several records of his own and has written a lot of songs a lot of people have recorded over the years. And Becky's recorded a couple of them, too. Becky, the song you just sang, Namely You, I love the melody, I really love the song, and yet, when...
you have trouble with the lyrics.
Just when you get to lines like, with you all the way to love, honor, and obey, when you love songs from the 30s and 40s and 50s, you inevitably run into some lyrics that are really sexist, and you have to kind of come to terms with that and figure out a way to deal with it, whether you're just going to overlook it or banish those songs from the list of the songs you love. How do you deal with it?
Well, I think I've come up with a policy, which is, in a song like that, it comes from a romantic standpoint, and we just have to realize that things were different at that time. And it's still a beautiful sentiment, but where I do draw the line is if someone is victimized and or, you know, beaten or something, I wouldn't sing a song like that. So that's not a whining kind of a song, so it's okay with me.
Do you have a good musical memory? When you're trying to learn a song, do you get it first time or?
No, I wish I did, and that's, I wish I could just learn a song immediately, but I have to painstakingly play the melody on my guitar and sing along with it and read the notes and then read the lyrics and listen to it, so I absorb it both with sight, sound, and playing it physically on the guitar. It's a tedious procedure.
What's the hard part about learning a song?
Well, it depends on the song. If there's a complicated melody, then that can really throw me sometimes. Or if there are a lot of weird lyrics, then it's hard to memorize them.
Say you're learning a melody that has like a difficult interval. What's your idea of a difficult melody to learn?
Lush Life comes to mind, but although I've never sung it, and I don't even have any aspirations of singing it, but...
Ballerina.
Oh, boy, that took me a long time to learn. Dance, ballerina, dance. And do your pirouette in rhythm with your aching heart. Dance, ballerina, dance. You mustn't once forget a dancer has to dance the part. See what I mean?
No. What makes that tricky? Because there's a lot of odd intervals and quick notes. And what's an accidental?
It's not in the scale.
It's not in the scale. Yeah, but I think this part. All those non-chord tones land on those big heavy accented beats, and you better hit them.
Yeah, get them right.
Otherwise, you just sound awful.
Rebecca Kilgore and Dave Frischberg recorded in late 1995. They have a new CD together called Not a Care in the World on the Arbors Jazz label. Our concert continues in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, we continue our concert with singer Rebecca Kilgore and pianist Dave Frischberg. He's at the piano and sings on the CD we're listening to now.
Tulip or turnip, rosebud or rhubarb, filet or plain beef stew. Tell me, tell me, tell me, dream face, what am I to you?
diamond or doorknob, sapphire or sawdust, champagne or plain homebrew. Tell me, tell me, tell me, dream face, what am I to you? Do I get the booby prize? Or will I be the hero? Am I heading for blue skies? Or is my ceiling zero? Tulip or turnip, moonbeam or mud pie?
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from Atlantic Monthly Press, publishers of Francisco Goldman's new novel, The Ordinary Seaman. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Back with more of our concert with singer Rebecca Kilgore and pianist and songwriter Dave Frischberg. They have a new CD together called Not a Care in the World. And beginning at the end of May, they'll perform together every Thursday in Portland at Atwaters. This week, Dave Frischberg is in Chicago playing at Toulouse. Our concert was recorded at the end of 1995 when Rebecca Kilgore and Dave Frischberg were on the East Coast recording the CD that just came out.
Well, I'm going to ask you to do another tune. This is another song that I really love, and I know the song through Ivy Anderson. It's called A Lonely Coed. And I'll be honest, I have my Columbia double album of her singing. This is on it. And much as I love Ivy Anderson's singing, this was not one of her records that really stood out to me. Then I heard your recording of it, and I thought, what a great song.
It is a great song. It's hard to believe that Duke Ellington wrote it. It's such a, well, corny sentiment. But I like it. It's about another shy person.
Is that why you sing it?
I guess I gravitate toward it for that reason. Why not?
I just can't seem to get that campus bloom. When I come in, the boys all leave the room. I just don't seem to attract. I'm just a lonely co-ed. I wear my clothes like all the other girls. I wear my hair in all the latest curls. They just don't seem to react. I'm just a lonely co-ed. Well, maybe I don't know enough of the trick. Maybe I lack technique. Maybe there's something that I could fix. Maybe my line is weak. Just a lonely, lonely co-ed.
I'm so glad you did that.
Thank you.
Becky Kilgore with Dave Frischberg at the piano. Dave, I'm going to ask you to pull your vocal mic over because I've got a question for you. And our listeners might have heard Dave Frischberg on the show several times over the years on Fresh Air. And I'm interested in how you started performing together. I don't know which of you to ask first.
Dave got the gig and hired me.
I knew Becky when I used to come to Portland. I came to Portland as a to do my act, you know, at a place called Father's. And Becky was playing with this band, Holy Cats.
This is when you first moved to
Portland? Yeah, no, before I moved to Portland, I was still in California. This was about 81, I think, when I first met you, wasn't it? Well, 82, something 82, like that, you know. So we've known each other quite a long time. I was knocked out with her then. She was the guitar player with the band, you know, but she was singing. She sounded great.
And so you asked her to sing with you? I mean, how did you start performing?
Well, later on, when I moved to Portland, I was offered this job at the Heathman, and they said they wanted a singer, and I thought of Becky. That's pretty simple.
And that was 3.5 years ago.
Yeah.
And Becky, did it change your singing at all to have Dave playing? I mean, I think he's just fantastic pianist,
yes.
And I wonder if you think that affected you.
It's been the gig of my life. It's been the greatest gig. For a few reasons. One is that it's a great venue and I can hear myself. When you're singing with a large group, you can't often hear yourself. So that's been great. And I have the most sympathetic accompanist I could imagine with Dave. It's just wonderful to have him as an accompanist. And the other reason is that I get to bring in new songs every week and just put them in front of him and he plays them. So I get to increase my repertoire by leaps and bounds.
And your taste in songs is pretty similar.
It seems to be, yeah. Becky's a good arranger and a good guitar player, and she knows how to write a good lead sheet, and it's increased my repertoire. It's enriched my repertoire quite a bit, too.
We're featuring a 1995 concert with Rebecca Kilgore and Dave Frischberg. They have a new CD together called Not a Care in the World, on which they perform some of the songs we're hearing today. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our concert with Rebecca Kilgore and Dave Frischberg, recorded in 1995 when they were performing together every week at a hotel in Portland. Now, when you're performing at the hotel, what kind of song goes over the best?
Oh, it varies. There are some kind of semi-comedic songs that I do. One is called Arthur Murray Taught Me Dancing in a Hurry, and another one is this song called Murder, He Says, which talks about the hip jargon of the 40s.
Actually, why don't I ask you to do that? This is a song that Anita O'Day recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else recorded?
Betty Hutton recorded it before her. But it was Anita O'Day's recording that inspired me to sing it.
Why don't you do it for us?
Okay. Finally found a fella. He's almost completely divine. But his vocabulary is killing this romance of mine. We get into an intimate situation, and then begins this Romeo's conversation. He says, murder, he says. Every time we kiss, he says, murder, he says. At a time like this, he says, murder, he says. Is that the language of love? He says, solid, he says. Meaning all my charms, he says, solid, he says. He takes me in his arms, he says, solid, he says. Is that the language of love?
He says, chick, chick, you torture me, zoot. Are we living? I'm thinking of leaving him flat. He said, dig, dig, the jump, the old ticker is given. Now he can't talk plainer than that. He says, murder, he says. Every time we kiss, he says, murder, he says. Keep it up like this and that, murder, he says. In that impossible town, we'll bring on nobody's murder but his own. With helium, now babe, we're cooking, and other expressions to wit. He says, we're in the groove, and the groove is good looking. He sounds like his uppers don't fit. He says, murder, he says. Every time we kiss, he says, murder, he says. Keep it up like this and that, murder, he says. In that impossible town, we'll bring on nobody's murder. Nobody's murder. Nobody's murder but his own. Murder, he says.
Becky Kilgore and Dave Frischberg. Becky, that's a really fun song. Do you like singing songs with archaic hipster lyrics?
Well, I don't have a whole repertoire of them or a medley of them, but that certainly
the
falls.
The archaic hipster medley.
Think, yeah, that was a pretty hip time, or they were self-consciously hip, and I think that's cute.
Actually, you have another archaic hipster tune that you do. Maybe I can get you to do just a chorus of this, of Robin Hood.
Oh, by
Did
Louis
you do a
Prima,
chorus of that?
Sure. I love him. And Keeley Smith, too.
Many long years ago, a fellow named Robin Hood, he used to rob the rich most any chance he could. Now you shouldn't get me wrong, because he was no square. With his trusty bow and arrow, he could part your hair. His buddy was Little John, another was Allendale, 140 more, together they'd hit the trail. They would scamper through the forest to the Blue Boar Inn. Mr. Eden told them where they should begin. He took from the rich man, he gave it to the poor man. He had a fear of no man, only for his chick, whose name was Marianne. Now here's the switcheroo, a Robin Hood's loyal crew. King Richard forgave them all, and here's what he had to do. They became his royal rangers and were very good. So that ends our little tale of Robin Hood. Why, that ends our little tale of Robin Hood.
Do you have any idea what the occasion for that song was?
No, I have the sheet music, and it doesn't talk much about it, no.
So that's one of the songs you found through sheet music?
Yeah, that's very curious.
I'd never
heard
it before. Had you ever actually heard it sung?
Yes, I'd heard it sung by Mildred Bailey, and then later I found it sung by Louis Prima. I don't know why he wrote it.
That's great. How did you start singing it?
It was that Mildred Bailey recording that inspired me.
Now, you play guitar. You sing in a country band also.
Right. I have a country band called Beckaroo. And we, well, you know, the Western swing is a style of music that Bob Wills originated in the 30s and 40s, playing jazz and country music, but with a mixed instrumentation. So that legacy runs deep in the, you know, history of swing music. So that group is kind of an offshoot of that. Although we progress into the 60s, we do a lot of music from the 60s.
Now, a lot of country singing has that nasal twang in, mm-hmm. in the voice, which you won't hear in jazz, certainly not in your approach to,
right.
to jazz singing. Do you have a different voice for country material?
I may sing just louder, but boy, one thing, I can't yodel. I wish I could, you know, if I could do that, then I'd really consider myself a country singer. But
excuse me, Dave, does she have a different voice when she sings country music?
I think so. I hear a different approach, yeah.
What's different?
Well, I think Becky has an idea of what authentic country singing sounds like, and you aim for that, and you're a different singer when you do that stuff.
Mm.
Are you uncomfortable with me playing that stuff for you? Or?
I don't know any songs that we know.
Oh, okay.
I can't think of any. I mean, I never like to sing Patsy Cline songs because she imprints her identity on a song so much that No one else can sing them. No one else can touch them.
How about Hank Williams?
Now, do you know D-I-V-O-R-C-E, Dave?
I'm afraid not. Okay. Not musically, anyway.
Well, moving right along.
So now I've heard you play a little bit of guitar on one of your recordings.
Mm-hmm.
You play mostly jazz guitar, or country guitar,
well,
folk guitar.
I started out playing folk guitar. See, this is a hidden thing about my background I didn't tell you, is that I started out playing like Joan Baez and Judy Collins. So that's
at home
before uh-huh. That was before I discovered Ella Fitzgerald and Billie Holiday. I play only rhythm. I don't play any lead. So the guitar that I play in the country band is very easy, three-chord song, so that's easy. And jazz is a little more difficult. I actually did take a year of jazz guitar lessons in my 20s once, and that's really helped me. It's helped me to learn these songs and to pick the chords off the records. I use my guitar playing mostly these days as a tool to help me learn songs.
When you were back in your Joan Baez era, did did you feel like you had the right voice for that material?
No, that's got to be have to be a soprano to do that, I think.
It's interesting. It was in a way such a girl thing, so to speak, gravitate to those singers, and in my generation, I always feel like it was more the boys who gravitated toward jazz if you knew people who liked jazz, and the girls are gravitating. There was something I feel in my generation, which is your generation too, that for a period was very gender-oriented in music.
It was. I never thought of that, but you're right. They were that whole school of those high singers strumming away on guitars.
So did you have any company when you when you left folk music and you found jazz?
No, I was kind of a loner. And that's why when I finally joined a band, it was like I had found my people. I was so happy. These were my comrades. So I that's why there was no turning back after that happened.
Well, I'm really so glad that we got to do this concert because I've been wanting to hear you sing in person. And since you mostly perform in Portland, this was the way of doing it.
I guess you never get out to the West Coast?
Well, rarely. But okay. It's just been wonderful to hear. I really love your singing. And I'd like you to go out with a song that is a song that, I don't know if you go through this. Do you go through this period of getting like infatuated with new songs before you really know them well?
Absolutely. I have many songs that I'm infatuated with, and I move on, but I never forsake the old songs. I keep them close to my heart. But this, I have many songs that I'm just nuts about, and I'd like to do one of them now.
Wonderful. Tell us what it is.
This is called "Not a Care in the World." It's one that I heard Peggy Lee. A recording of Peggy Lee singing it with Benny Goodman. I think it was about 1942. It's one of her really early ones, and I just love it.
Though hope is low, I'm aglow when you smile at me. Life is simple as ABC. Not a thought in my head. Not a care in the world. Though skies are gray, I'm as gay as a Disney crowd. Not a wrinkle upon my brow. Not a cent in the red. Not a care in the world. I view the scene like the old Queen of Russia. Like Kate the Great used to state long ago, Nietzsche vo. So if I move in the groove with a giddy trot, I'm just trotting because I've got not a bean in my pot, not a care in the world. Like the old Queen of Russia. like Kate the Great used to stay long ago. Nietzsche Vo. So if I move in the groove with a giddy trot, oh, I'm just trotting because I've got not a bean in my pot, not a care in the world, not a care in the world.
Rebecca Kilgore and Dave Frischberg recorded in late 1995. They have a new CD together called Not a Care in the World on Arbor's Jazz. Dave Frischberg is performing in Chicago this week at the club Toulouse. This is Fresh Air. I've really enjoyed listening back to this concert with Rebecca Kilgore and Dave Frischberg, and believe me, they also make regular appearances on my CD player. But right now, we have to pause to remind you that this is a national fundraising week for public radio, and you can get in the act. Here's how. We have a remembrance of Allen Ginsberg from our book critic Maureen Corrigan. Ginsberg died over the weekend at the age of 70. Before we hear from Maureen, let's listen to Allen Ginsberg reading from his poem, A Supermarket in California. It was recorded in Berkeley in 1956.
What thoughts I have of you tonight, Walt Whitman. For I walk down the side streets under the trees with a headache, self-conscious, looking at the full moon. In my hungry fatigue and shopping for images, I went into the neon fruit supermarket, dreaming of your enumeration. What peaches and what penumbras, whole families shopping at night, aisles full of husbands, wives in the avocados, babies in the tomatoes, and you, Garcia Lorca, what were you doing down by the watermelon? I saw you, Walt Whitman, childless, lonely old grubber, poking among the meats in the refrigerator and eyeing the grocery boys. I heard you asking questions of each. Who killed the pork chops? What price bananas? Are you my angel?
Whenever I teach poetry courses, I always devote a week to Allen Ginsberg's poems, and I never do a particularly good job. I love Ginsberg, but teaching him is like trying to serve spaghetti with a spatula. Just when you think you've slid your critical utensil under a manageable portion of verse, the lines slither off back into Ginsberg's big bardic bowl. I always give students the same pep talk before we read Howl. You've just got to let the images wash over you, I plead. Really hear the music of the verse. So the students begin reading, but within the first 20 lines of Howl, they encounter as many esoteric references as T.S. Eliot packed into the first few stanzas of The Wasteland. They get bogged down in asking reasonable questions. Who's Carl Solomon? Hydrogen jukebox? What does that mean? Other times they take my hippy-dippy reading recommendation too much to heart. When students give presentations on Howl, they frequently turn off the lights, burn incense, and make the rest of the class sit cross-legged on the floor. Well, this gets us into the mood, I always think to myself, but are they appreciating the poem, or are they just acting goofy? Periodically, I think about giving up on Ginsberg, but I never will. 4 years ago, I experienced something close to what Ginsberg himself called the ancient heavenly connection to the starry dynamo in the machinery of night. My class then had just read Howl, and a really gifted and cool student named Sean Burns had passionately defended the poem. After class, Sean told me that Ginsberg was giving a reading in Washington later that week, and he was going to try to go to see him. I urged Sean to go. I told him I'd heard Ginsberg many years before in the village, and he was a terrific reader of his own poetry. But that week I was overwhelmed with work and gave no thought to going to the reading myself. In fact, when Sean showed up at my office a few days later, I was still so harried, I tried to brush him off. "Here, this is for you," he said, thrusting a piece of paper into my hand. It was a program from the poetry reading the previous night. On the back was a drawing in black magic marker of an unhappy Buddha floating in the stars. At his feet was a skull with a flower in its teeth. Above his head was a moon and more stars and the word, "Ah." The drawing was inscribed to me and signed Allen Ginsberg. I talked to him after the reading, Sean explained, and told him about our class and how tough it is to get students into poetry. Ginsberg started drawing this while I was talking. He drew a frowning Buddha, he said, because teaching is hard. Well, if I'd followed the anti-formalist beat precepts that I preach when I teach how, I would have stuck that drawing up on my wall with a gob of spittle. Instead, I spent $100 to get it framed. Whenever I look at it, I remember a wonderful student and a great poet teacher who knew, from his own vast experience, how wearying it can be to try to get people to listen. Ginsberg, after all, cast himself in the image of Whitman. He was a street minstrel, a public visionary, whose free verse broadsides sang out about sexual liberation and McCarthyism, supermarkets in California, and libraries full of tears. His images sometimes could be crude and even silly, but those very flaws helped save him from turning into a scold. Besides, like Whitman, he was too comical, too full of democratic faith ever to sound sour. In America, one of his greatest poems, Ginsberg memorably declared, "It occurs to me that I am America." To a lot of people, including me, that line was pretty close to the truth.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University.
I dreamt I dwelled in a homeless place where I was lost alone. Folk looked right through me into space and passed with eyes of stone. This change from me, a friendly smile or word is sweet as fearless charity. Woe, working man, cannot spare a dime, nor look into a homeless eye, afraid to give the time. So rich or poor, no gold to talk. Smile on your face. The whole
Allen Ginsberg singing his own lyric to Amazing Grace. Fresh Air's interviews and reviews are produced by Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, and Amy Sallet, with Alan Tu and Monique Nazareth. Research assistance from Mike and Scott. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross. This is NPR, National Public Radio.